Croeso and welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to give 110% to pull out all the stops, to get out of it what we put into it, to go that extra mile, to be the hardest worker in the room, to dare to have blue sky thinking, deliver on Welsh talk entertainment, even if it means working beyond the fuck it.
No, you gotta keep going.
Working beyond the cop, aka the close of play, aka the end of the day.
EOD.
COP, close of play. I am Jack. As always, I'm joined by my co-worker, my colleague, Franks. We work day and night tirelessly for this.
Have you been watching?
I just wanted to do all the standard, what are they called, like...
Diary of a CEO.
Yeah, that's shite.
Yeah, that fucking like, cunt. Who's,
I'm so annoyed they messed up the ending.
Even in parody, we can't be hard workers.
No, failed at the last hurdle.
That guy, Jake Humphries, who is the biggest cunt, he is the worst one. And he's like, he's not even good at anything. He's like, oh, I get up at like, he's trying to do the British Mark Wahlberg, where he's like, I get up at 4 a.m. He's like, well, why? And then he goes to bed at like,
just Google him,
six.
I know exactly you're on about, yeah. What a wanker.
Utter cunt. So, yeah. If you're a Humphries fan, fuck off. Fuck off.
Just
yeah.
Do one. You got no business being here.
Did you know what was making me... Because I listen to loads and loads of podcasts, and that sounded like a brag, actually, because I listen to loads of podcasts, because yeah. I'm quite cool. But he does loads of them, and he's got like his own one where he's like, he's always having like these high performing people on all the time, and they just sound miserable, and they all just sound fucking like they're sick of it. But I always get their adverts on my playlist. But yesterday,
like worshiping the grind shit, isn't it?
Yeah,
I can't stand any of that.
Yeah, it's like fucking, you work at the co-op, like don't worry about working doing the grind. It's like you're not making any money yourself for it. That's what I never get. It's like, oh, work really hard, and then some other cunt gets rich from it. It's like fuck that. Do the bare min, man.
Do the bare minimum, and then make a podcast with your mate, and then when you do it, have some drinks.
Yeah. That's all you need, man. History, banter, booze. Everyone exactly. History start with a B. It can be called the three Bs. But one of the adverts I heard yesterday on a podcast was so funny. It was for Travel Cymru, and it's teaching people that you can now tap on to and tap off, so you don't need to have change all that stuff. And it's like, well, any of our buses, you can tap on to tap off, and which has been a thing for fucking everywhere. You know, like every train station is like, you can use your ticket. You know, all nearly every major city has like a metro link or something where you just tap on to top off. But it was explaining it like it was a fucking brand new concept. It was going, so when you tap on, no, it says, when you get on, you tap on. When you get off, you tap off. Tap on to get off. Let me try and remember it again now. Tap on to tap off. Tap on. It was something like that. Oh, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's so fucking childlike. When you get on, tap on. When you get off,
the
tap
funny thing
off.
Is. As an avid bus user for many a moon, I knew the tap on, tap off. You know, as soon as I saw it, I was like, I get it. It's a concept that's quite easy. You know, I've been to a major metropolitan area before. I can do this. But then it's amazing when you go on the bus these days and like, not even people that are that old, they don't have the excuse of being like pensioners or anything, don't understand it. They get on, they try and pay the normal way, and the guy's like, oh, it's tap on, tap off, and they're like, what? You know, they just cannot understand.
Well,
it's
maybe
like,
there is a reason for these adverts then. But
yeah, there's probably an uptick of people going, I don't get it. What do you mean, tap on, tap off?
But it was just the fact they sung it like a nursery rhyme. It was like, when you get on, you tap on. When you get off, you tap off. It's like, oh my God, we understand.
It's mad that they thought they needed to make a song out of it. It's a very simple thing to just put in words. You don't need to sing them to make, how am I going to remember that?
I got so laughed at that so much. I sent it to my mate Ollie yesterday. When you get on the bus, you tap on. When you get off the bus, you tap off. I thought I fucking recorded the actual advert. It's just me doing it.
That's even better.
Fucking waste of time. It's just me saying the exact same thing. God, my memory's so fucking awful. But it just made me laugh. It's like, what is this? It's like we're fucking play days. It just made no sense.
No,
anyway.
Well,
that's what Crime Mike is this week.
I was going to say, I saw one for Transport for Wales the other day, and it was a real, real misfire by the marketing team.
Right? Oh, God,
It starts off probably, I imagine any people in Wales listening to this have probably seen it. It's where it goes around, and it's just like, I'm paraphrasing, they're like, shit, next one, dog shit. Next one. I fucking hate the trains in this country. Next one. And it's like, hey, we know we got a lot to fix, okay? But we're investing in infrastructure. But I'm like, it's like, what an awful advert. Like, people just going, better in bloody third world countries than this. Hey, look.
Yeah, because it shows their comments on like the advert, doesn't it? And then it's like, just like a montage of all these comments that people have said on their posts. But it's clearly someone in marketing, like, hey guys, let's just be transparent. It's like, yeah, that's good. But sometimes you don't have to say, you're a bunch of nonsense.
I was exaggerating with the shit and all that, but they are literally going like utterly useless and things like that. Like they never turn up on time.
Pig it's just dogs, a such pig bad fuckers. PR.
Bunch of pig dogs, pig art boys driving the trains. I got one little, before I let you get into it, I had one little story to tell you from the weekend that is set somewhat to do with public transport, so it's adjacent.
could have been so
me
smooth.
And Amy, really yeah, I know, so I know, smooth. It's really smooth there. Me and Amy went to out for a piss up in Newport last weekend, and
someone's
we had to get into town. I know.
Bragging.
We went to the little what you call it as well, the little food court. Love it. Yeah. Lots of tasty
it is
grub
class.
There. Anyway,
yeah, it's really
by
good
the
there.
By. But anyway, so we got the bus into town because we need to get the train. Between the bus stop and the train station, right, there's this little, like, scummy kid was going around on his bike. And he did, like, a little fucking, like, drift stop type thing right in front of me and Amy as we were walking.
Sorry, and that aroused you.
Oh, aroused me, yeah. Sorry. I don't like kids approaching me at speed. It's too much for me to deal with. No, he did it, and... to give him a slight credit, he said like a half-ass sorry as he did it, but he said it as I said, do you have to? And then he screamed at me and he went, I said sorry! Like, in the middle of town. And so I was like, oh, fuck off, whatever. Amy called him a scroat. Bet that fucking hurt him. And then I didn't realise. We carried on walking. We were both just going, what an idiot, what a dick, and all that sort of stuff. And then I could hear this. I didn't realise it was him. He was cycling, like, I don't know, few meters along with me, and he was pointing at me and going, kiddie fiddler, kiddie fiddler. And he just did it like three or four
good.
Times, and then he fucking cycled
so
off.
When I said that he got like, aroused by kids, that was
he knew.
A lot of foresight.
He just he saw my fucking trousers.
How do you keep your shirt so clean, mister?
Yeah.
Fuck off, clean shirt.
The fucking, the vim that he shouted at me with, though. He went, I said, so sorry! God,
so,
it drew the eyes of everyone outside of Greg's.
I love that for, like, fucking 30 years, when you're, like, under 10, you can just, or, like, 11, and you're a bit of a naughty kid, you can just shout at adults, kiddie fiddler. And it's so funny. Yeah. It works every time, because everyone's like, well, I know he's not, but no smoke, no fire.
But it is quite funny. People looking at me straight.
So embarrassing. Like,
yeah, like, middle of town.
Yeah. When I was in Melbourne, in Brisbane, when I was... when I was there for like 6 days for work, these little Australians, they got like another word for like, I don't like the word chav. Chav's quite a fucking snobby word to say, but like just utes, like naughty kids. And it was some fat man on the bus pedo check because he asked them to turn their music down. And he was turning his toes. Oh, fatty pedo, man. Oh, fucking hell, man. Got ourselves a pedo. They call rock spiders in Australia.
Rock spiders?
Yeah.
I've heard bogans before. I remember hearing that.
Bogan is like, yeah, so bogan is like another word for a bit of a, sorry, let me just get on Urban Dictionary. Bogan's a bit like, yeah, country boy, but like a bit of a booze. But not, I don't know, it's just like a bit of a, I always find those words quite fucking, it's just what like, well, I suppose Australians are a bit more fun with it, but chav, do you know what it stands for? It stands for Council House in Violence.
Oh, was it? I didn't know it was like an acronym.
It's like a Daily Mail thing. It's like a fucking cunt of a newspaper like made it up and then just started slanging it at people who were working class.
That sounds pretty on brand for them, to be fair.
Can I just tell you why they're called rock spiders? Cause,
yeah, go for it.
I think it was quite funny. Oh, yeah, that's it. I think it's because they like, oh, it's pretty dark. because they're like rock spiders are little spiders that like getting into little cracks. And that's what paedophiles do.
Oh, right. Pedos. Rock spiders. Very good.
A term used to describe... So, rock spider, a term used to refer to paedophiles in common usage with correctional facilities, derived from the analogy that a paedophile, like a rock spider, is always getting into little cracks, crass and vulgar. There it is. That fucking rock spider, mate. He had it coming. Apparently, that's what they use in prison a lot for being a...
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
So in what we've learned from this little discussion is if a little kid is being a little shit, don't ever tell him off. Let him get away with it.
That fucking thing in Peep Show, isn't it? Where those kids in the first episode start calling him a pedo. Yeah. How'd you get your shirt so clean, mister? And like, it's so funny. That's what naughty kids will do. Because they know they're not like, it's the worst thing anyone could be. So like,
they're unbound by the shackles of society. Yeah. And they just fucking throw the pedo accusation around. Yeah. Especially coming from a kid as well.
I know.
Because if you started going, I'm not a pedo, I'm not a kid.
You sound like, oh, such a pedo.
You can't do that.
Well, me and you are going out tonight, aren't we?
We're going on the town, mate.
Going on the town, aka going to a board game cafe.
I wasn't going to say I want to mention it because
I haven't told this to you, but I've been having like crazy panic attacks recently. And I've been like to the point now where I'm like, all right, I probably should get a bit of help with it. So I'm doing I'm doing CBT, but which is like cognitive behavioral therapy. I've only just started, but like it's like I've had loads of them recently. I had to like stop playing football I had to come off the pitch for a little bit, and it's been like I'm not too. I think I don't know. I won't get into why, but I'm not going to break down here. Why
are you? Are you just prepping now if I fucking beat you in a game like this?
The reason I mention it is because my first proper big one happened when me and Emma were walking into town, and we were walking up George Lloyd Avenue, and it was quite a nice evening. We just chatted, and then all of a sudden I had like vertigo. Like I felt really strange, and I didn't say much. Mm. And then like she could tell I was a bit something was going on, and then we went to go meet her friends at the board game cafe, and we got in there and the room felt like on a massive tilt, and it was really hectic and busy, and I just felt, fuck, this is intense. And I kept excusing myself to the toilets, and my pupils had gone huge from like fight or flight, and I was all like, fuck, I do not feel right. And then we sat down and the guy started explaining rules to a board game, and I was like, fuck this. I had a proper smile.
So we're going back to the site of the trauma.
We're going back so I then said, like, I said to Em, I was like, I'm gonna have to go. And Emma's friends are so lovely, but that makes it worse when people are being really nice to you. Just made me want. They were like, I text them saying, "I'm really sorry, guys. I'm struggling a little bit in there. I'm gonna have to go." And I was in McDonald's trying to order a Coke so I could have like a bit of sugar in me to like chill or to like just. Cause I felt like a bit. Like, I felt like all wobbly legs. And
you went for a pint after then, didn't you?
Yeah,
Emma saw you on the way home. Panic attack. Sorry.
Em came out, and I couldn't really figure out how to use the machine. I was just all over the shop. But they sent me like a really nice message. I was like, "Oh, don't ever be nice to me." It made me absolutely spiral even more. I can't handle people being kind. But I feel a lot better now. It's because I've got fucking. I think there's loads of different reasons. I'm quite an anxious person, but. I'm trying to sell the flat, but we can't because we got fucking Grenfell cladding. So like, even though the government said okay, if it gets like a certain certificate, like A2 certificate, that's fine. But the banks are saying no, it's got to be A1. I know. So like, we're just stuck here and it's in limbo, and it just makes you a bit claustrophobic and whatever. Life's intense at the moment, isn't it? So I felt a little bit overwhelmed. But I'm going back to the scene of the original crime tonight.
I was about to say nothing. A few board games and some beers won't. Sort out, but then is it like you said, it's the scene of the crime where it all
won't have too many beers because I'm driving to fucking Llanelli tomorrow morning.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, I'm taking Emma to get her makeup done for the wedding, so I won't be too many bevs, but we'll board game it up, mate. And this is probably interesting just to me and you, so maybe we'll move on.
I was gonna say, we were just discussing our plans later now, aren't we?
Sorry. do we have to shout anybody out?
Who've we got? Let me have a look.
So, whilst Jack looks, we've had some great people sign up to the Patreon. We've had people sign up to the Patreon, which is fucking amazing and really helpful for keeping the show running and keeping the lights on and keeping the costs of it, because it costs money to run this ramp. I know it doesn't sound like it should cost money, but this actually costs money to produce.
Believe it or not.
So the contributions are fucking amazing and we love them dearly. And each week we have a producer credit, and then we also give shout outs to people who are on the lower tiers. So people who pay the £10 a month, which is mad, are on the Tailey tier, and they get like episodes written about them, artwork, some a bunch of stuff, and they also get producer credits. But then if you also sign up to the other tiers, we like to give out Patreon shout outs.
Yeah, a few jibber jabbers, we'll occasionally give a little tar, mate. Yeah. So yeah, and this lucky this week's lucky,
lucky. Oh, he's so lucky. Again.
Let me say that again. I just fucking lucky, lucky, lucky. I was like a fucking CD-ROM.
We're keeping this in.
Oh, right, never mind then. Right, this week's lucky shout out, because they're so lucky, is Ian Bainon. Well done, Ian Bainon. You lucky Bainon. Son of a bitch. Yeah. Well done, Bainon. Well done.
Yeah, and yeah, we used to have a teacher called Bainon, didn't we? So maybe you're as...
I was just about to say, we usually try and do something funny, but yeah. Then I was like, I literally can't think of anything apart from the fact that we had a teacher called Mr. Bainon.
And he was the hunk of the school, wasn't he? He was
in shorts,
teacher.
Come rain or shine, he'd be out there in shorts, showing off his legs.
We used to always say he got married in rugby shorts because he was fucking obsessed. And he always used to hassle us because we didn't play rugby, even though we were like big kids and like, you know, we're like 6 foot in sixth form. And he was like, oh, do you ever play rugby? Why are you playing rugby? I was like, I can't be asked. Yeah. Leave me alone.
I remember one time he made me play rugby. Yeah. I just bullied me into it, basically. Yeah. And then it was like, oh, yes, because after school. I was like, after school? I was like, I'll stay out of school. And I was dog shit in it because
it's so funny. You got red carded on your first game, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, my studs had broken anyway, right? So he went, oh, what size are you? And I went, 11. He went, well, so-and-so is a 9. That'll do. I was like, will it? Will it do? And my feet were like, you know, like those... Japanese tied, like, cloven foot women. I was like that, running around. And yeah, I got sent off for my first ever match because I did it. When I describe it in my head, it makes total sense. Someone just sidestepped me. I went for the ball and I just basically slapped someone across the face really hard. Yeah. But then everyone who was watching said it looked like he was standing dead still and you just went, yeah!
I remember we were playing Barry Boys as well, which it was a rival. It's a proper, like, intense game and you got sent off for the minutes.
I think maybe my lack of understanding of, like, the rivalry and everything might have gone in my favour there because... I was just like, oh, well, so ta-ra then. Because they all started on me after I slapped someone. And yeah. I was like, oh, God.
That's a bit much. So this week's episode is the probably lesser known Llewellyn, which is Dafydd ap Llewellyn. It was the thorn between two roses. And I say that because we're speaking about a Welsh leader who's sort of forgotten about because he comes betwixt Llewellyn the Great, aka Llewellyn Vawr, and Llewellyn Ein Lliw Olaf, the last native prince of Wales. So he's Dafydd Llewellyn. He's the son of Llewellyn, and he's I'll go into it a little bit.
That's probably tough, isn't it? Two big boots to fill either side.
Yeah, he's the uncle of Llewellyn, Ein Lliw Olaf, who comes up in a bit. But I'll explain all of that. I'll get into it all. So, like I said, he was the son of Llewellyn the Great and of Joan, Lady of Wales, the illegitimate daughter of King John of England. Known in Welsh, she was called as Siwan. And we should do an episode on her because she's got an interesting story. Dafydd's birthday has been disputed, but it's more or less agreed now that it's shortly after Easter in 2012 at Castell Llyn Blas in Coles Hill in Flintshire, where the good doctor's from. And then when Dafydd was born, his English grandfather, who was King John, was engaged in a struggle with the rebellious barons who eventually made him sign the Magna Carta. Let me just double check that, actually.
I was just about to just go into Magna Carta, the Magna Carta. Because we love to just chant that, don't we?
So he signed the Magna Carta, which was fucking referenced by every maniac on Facebook during lockdown. It's against Magna Carta.
Anyone who wants to build an extension on their house without getting permission, it's Magna Carta, my home's my castle, Magna Carta.
When Dafydd was born, his grandfather, King John, was engaged in this battle, or struggled against rebellion, so he wasn't that arsed about him. But as time went on, Llewellyn Vawr, so his father, made vigorous attempts to have him accepted by King John and the other lords as his sole heir. But as we know through the whole of that episode and through Welsh lore, Llewellyn's older son, Griffith, who was born to a mistress called Tanguistil, had also claimed as Llewellyn's successor. Llewellyn was trying to change the law a bit, and he devoted much of his effort to ensuring that his only legitimate son, Dafydd, would follow him as ruler of Gwynedd and amend Welsh law in Gwynedd. So Llywelyn's amendment to Welsh law favouring legitimate children in a church-sanctioned marriage mirrored the earlier efforts of Lord Rees, Prince of Haybarth, in designating Griffith ap Rees II as the heir over their illegitimate eldest son, Maelgwyn ap Rees. And in both cases, favouring the legitimate child born in a church-sanctioned marriage led to much better relations for their sons with the wider Anglo-Norman society and polity and the Catholic Church, because they got rid of this perceived stigma of illegitimacy. So David's older brother, but illegitimate brother, Griffith, was therefore given the boot as the primary heir of Llywelyn, though he'd still be given lands to rule. So this is like a huge change in Welsh hierarchy.
Yeah, I was going to say, getting rid of that, what was it called again? It was something with C, isn't it? You know, Cyfran, I think it is, where, you know, it's like equally split.
Equally split, yeah. Like I said, this is like a departure from Welsh custom, which was... which held that the eldest son was his father's. So it used to be that they were like equal splitting, but the eldest son would be the heir of the father, regardless of the parents' marital status and stuff. So it wasn't just like, they didn't matter so much about if they were with your wife or mistress or all that stuff.
Yeah.
And in 2020, Llywelyn had a minority government of King Henry come to acknowledge David as the heir. So he really put the groundwork in to make sure that David was seen as the actual heir. And in 1222, he even petitioned Pope Honorius III to have David's succession confirmed. The original petition...
I'm assuming when you said 2020 earlier, you meant 1220.
Sorry, 1220, Llywelyn had a minority government. In 1222, he petitioned Pope Honorius III. The original petition has not been preserved, but the Pope's reply has, and it refers to the detestable custom in his... the Pope said, "The detestable custom in his land, whereby the son of a handmaiden was equal to the heir of the son of a free woman, and illegitimate sons obtained the inheritance as if they were legitimate." So that Pope sounds like a fucking nice bloke, doesn't he? So he
sounds lovely.
Really anti the fact that in Wales you had equality between people like that. But this clever bit of politics from Llywelyn was welcomed. So like the Pope, who was one of the most influential figures in the entire world, that meant it meant Llywelyn was abolishing this custom that Catholics really went into, which made the Pope like him a lot more, and then willing to acknowledge him as like the rightful ruler. I think it's also...
Oh, that's good. So setting up David, like a nice playing field for David then, is it, when he sort of came of...
And I do think it's mad that back then that people were contacting the Pope from Wales, like sending cunts out for months to march, and send a letter to say, "Hey, my king's son, like, can he be my favourite son? Text back." And then, like, you know, we used to do like the old TB. It's like, and then wait months to reply, and it just gets back to Llywelyn, and it's just K Shaw for the little kiss at the end. It's just like
TTYL.
Well, but so now this like love affair between the Pope and Llywelyn, it like continued to blossom. And in 1226, Llywelyn persuaded the Pope to declare his wife Joan, so David's mother, to be legitimate daughter of King John. So again, that was to strengthen David's position. So he has a legitimate, his mother is the legitimate son of a king. And in 2029, the English crown accepted that David's homage for the lands, and he would like inherit from his father and stuff. So it kind of been settled like through the great diplomacy of Llywelyn. He set up his son to be in like a good place, and I think it really shows the insane
to inherit.
It shows the insane influence Llywelyn had compared to any other Welsh leader who came before him. Like, we got to do a full episode on Llywelyn Vowed, like to really shine a light on all the shit he did to like unify and to promote Wales. In 1238, Llywelyn held a council at Strata Florida Abbey. It's such a funny name that it's like it sounds like
Strata Florida Abbey,
Wales, UK, where the other Welsh princes swore fealty to David. So he like literally made the other princes around there come and say, "This is the top dog," which is what he did originally when he was in Aberdovey back when he was gaining power in 1216. Llywelyn made all the others come around and say, like, "Look, best chances, pick me as leader. You can keep your stuff, you know, keep your fiefdoms or principalities."
That's what it means, because, you know, lots of things to do with, like, keeping your word back then as well. If you actually sit everyone down and be like, "Do you swear fealty?" This probably carries a bit more weight, doesn't it, than just, like, in a letter going, "I'm your lord now." And you go, "Yeah, sure, mate, no problem," till it doesn't suit type thing.
And yeah, and Llywelyn also invited lots of English people to come and like pay homage and stuff and to recognize Dafydd. But the King of England wrote to the other rulers, forbidding them to do homage. So instead, they just recognized it rather than fealty. So like, okay, this is who you
Oh,
are, but
okay.
we don't owe you any fealty. And this was because Llywelyn had them pay homage to him, and he grew far too powerful for his father-in-law, like King John at the time. Because he let Llywelyn kind of do this and get people around him to like pay all this homage, it led to wars between them because Llywelyn became so powerful. And additionally, Prince Llywelyn arranged for his son Dafydd to marry Isabella de Barossi, the eldest daughter of William de Barossi, who was accused of doing the dirty with Llywelyn's wife, Joan or Siwan. So because and he was caught in bed with her, and William. So the guy who was caught in bed with Joan or Siwan, I say Siwan, that's the Welsh version of Joan. So William was hung, and I don't mean he was well endowed, although that might have been the reason why old Siwan took a liking to him, but he was hung for being caught in bed with Llywelyn's wife.
That
And
would have
what's
been a
more
great
so,
outcome to it. I
yeah.
caught him with my wife. What? He's hung. Wait, you've killed him. No, I'm
No,
just saying, you've got a
he'd
massive
got a
shlong.
schlonger, mate.
Got my house too strong, you're mad.
Yeah,
It's fine.
but what's crazy, he hung him in front of 800 men, and William was like this really influential and powerful person from England and a lord. But what's telling was it was a really muted response from the English lords and royalty. They were like, it tells of how powerful Llywelyn was. Like, he could hang this
He
person
could do
and
that,
determine it
yeah.
himself and have no repercussions. Siwan, his wife, I'll stick to Siwan because it's a Welsh podcast, but yeah, she was imprisoned for a year, but eventually forgiven and brought back into the fold. But back to the story, we see another example of like the shrewd mind of Llywelyn. He knew that William de Barossi had no male heir, so Llywelyn strategized that the vast de Barossi, I'm saying it wrong, it's Braose, Barossi, and that's what I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
Llywelyn strategized that this vast Barossi holdings in South Wales would now pass to Dafydd with Isabella, because there was no, he had
I got
William
you, yeah.
had no sons of his own. So the older illegitimate son, the one I mentioned before, Griffith, he was given land in Meirionnydd and Ardudwy. And Ardudwy is said to be the place where people escaped the flooding for Cantre Gwaelod. But it's not a
Ah,
huge
I
amount
see.
of land. But anyway, he was given this place in Meirionnydd and there in North Wales. But his rules, this is Dafydd's brother and Llywelyn's first son, but illegitimate. His rule was apparently very oppressive and violent and cruel. So in 1221, Llywelyn stripped him of these territories, again showing like his leadership skills and why he's known as being great. Like he's happy to lay down the law on his own family. So much
Yeah.
so that he actually in 1228 imprisoned him and didn't release him for another 6 years.
But yeah.
And upon his release, he was given some land to rule again, and it seemed like he bucked his ideas up in prison and he ruled better this time. And by 1238, he'd been given like a substantial part of powers to control. But then in 2037, Dafydd lost one of his most influential supporters, which was his mother. She died at Abergwyngegin, and but he had retained Etnafed Vychan, which is a seneschal of Gwynedd, which is like a steward. So,
Seneschal, is it?
I thought it was a Welsh word.
Seneschal, I
I
think.
thought it was
Senechal.
seneschal. Yeah, seneschal, which is like a steward who wields like strong political influence. So even though his mother died, he also held a lot of influence. He retained the support of Etnafed. But then the same year, Llywelyn the Great suffered a paralytic stroke, which led to Dafydd taking an increasing role in government. So his mother died and his father died, and you know his father was one of, if not the greatest ruler in Wales.
Yeah.
Now Dafydd was running the place, so it got to like 1240, and he decided to meet with the king, who is now King Henry III, who replaced King John, which makes King Henry Dafydd's uncle because
Got you.
his. Dafydd's father's father-in-law's brother, so which I think makes him his uncle, and that's how his history refers to him as. So Dafydd's
Okay.
dad's father-in-law's brother is King Henry, and that would make him Dafydd's uncle. Either way,
Gotcha.
on 15th of May, he met King Henry III at the Great Assembly in Gloucester, and Henry knighted Dafydd and publicly acknowledged his position as Prince of Gwynedd. But although Henry accepted his position, he wasn't going to let him retain all his father's conquests outside of Gwynedd, because his father had conquered so much and it was really numerous. He was like, no, you're not having fucking all that, mate. So, and as this relationship between the uncle and nephew deteriorated, David sent ambassadors to the court of King Louis IV, or the ninth, sorry, of France, in an attempt to form an alliance between France and Gwynedd. But then in August 2041, so not even that long after this, Henry invaded Gwynedd and forced his nephew into submission.
I know you mean 12, but just for the clarity of so the listeners.
What did I say?
20 again.
Jesus fucking Christ. I can't. It's numbers, man. Fucking numbers. So then in August 1241, Henry invaded Gwynedd and forced his nephew into submission. Under the terms of the Treaty of Gwernegron, signed near St. Asaph on 29th of August, he'd like kind of forced David's hand into being quite being subdued. David had to relinquish all of his lands outside of Gwynedd and surrender his half-brother, so Griffith ap Llywelyn, to the English king, so that's his older brother. David was then imprisoned in the Tower of London, so he's had a fucking poor life of just being locked up other places. It was thought that the King of England would try and turn Griffith against David, and we knew that Griffith was a bit of a bastard and he was like a cruel leader, so, and like he could be turned into this puppet prince to rival and destabilize David and Gwynedd.
You can sort of imagine like the lines being fed. You know, oh look, you're the eldest. You should be the one ruling in the first place. You know, you were dealt a bit of shit hand when you were that illegitimacy stuff. Why don't you come over to the old English side? And yeah, you can sort of see how they could worm his way into that.
But before that could actually come to fruition, Griffith fell to his death in March 2044 while attempting to escape the Tower of London by climbing down knotted sheets. But apparently he was quite a fat bloke, so he couldn't handle it. And he was like a large guy, so he fell and he died, which made things easier for David because he no longer had to be careful around reacting to the English because his brother was no longer held a hostage and he couldn't be used against him.
Blessing in disguise.
And David allied himself with other Welsh princes to attack like Welsh English possessions in Wales, and his forces and allies experienced like great success in North Wales. And by March 1245, David had recovered the castle of Mold along with his former lands in Flintshire. So he had like, a really good year of just allying up with other Welsh people to like push the English back. But then
I can imagine a lot of people like his soldiers that may have, you know, have that reverence for his dad as well. Would be like, I'll follow the, like on Game of Thrones, I'll follow the young wolf.
He was having success. So like people like, you are your father's son. You are your father's son, you bastard. But this then led to a big invasion by the English, led by King Henry, his forces, and they caused like a bloody trail pushing the Welsh back as far as the River Conwy. And it even started building like castles in Deganwy because they were like, they put a big effort and loads of money in pushing the Welsh back and like trying to control the gains that
Taylor's
all this
time, that.
Yeah. And it's mad that that area, like Flintshire and stuff, we mentioned this when the Doctor was on, but like Flintshire and Mold Castle, all these places, they get fucking so much like war going on there and constantly getting pushed to either side, like
constant tug of war, isn't it, if he owns the land
for like hundreds of years. But then anyway, so this kind of this caused David to try and recreate what his father had done so well, and he started to bring in the Catholic Church. So David entered into negotiation with Pope Innocent IV. And as an aside, I bet you he was the least innocent man ever. That's got that's got kiddie fiddler vibes written all over it.
Definitely. That's a rock spider, if I've ever heard one, isn't it?
Absolute rock spider himself. David sent his message and it resulted in the Vatican recognizing his right to rule North Wales, which again like shows he had his father's intuition and ability for diplomacy. But sadly, as time went on, this decision was reversed and fighting then continued in Deganwy. And I think it's because the English, because they were at war with the English, the Pope decided not to side with the Welsh. And this war continued in Deganwy until Henry ran short of provisions and the Welsh had cut off links for them to get resupplied, and the Welsh kept attacking caravans and plagued the English with like ferocity.
Smart, super smart.
Yeah, they were like, and they did like classic savage guerrilla attacks along the English like supply lines.
The standard Welsh playbook.
Yeah, and they realised it was futile to try and conquer, so the Welsh had captured, and they also, the Welsh had captured loads of provisions, making them better equipped at the expense of the English, so this was like really costly, and it led to the English signing a treaty when Henry's army withdrew in the autumn, and the idea was they'd just sign this treaty you know, these treaties hold for peace until they're broken. Mm. And it was a truce, not a treaty. So they send this truce where they'd like the English would leave the country, pull out all their forces and stuff, and leave the Welsh to it.
Pinky and promise, yeah.
That truce remained into effect throughout the winter, but the war was like, so that no one knew what was going to happen next. Like, were the English going to come back and invade again? How was Dafydd going to like bolster his troops and resupply? But we never got to find out, because suddenly Dafydd then died at his royal home in Abergwyngregin in February 2046.
No way.
So he had like this really good couple of years of defending Wales and like good diplomacy, and he was showing all the characteristics his dad had. But then apparently it was incredibly tough winters, and no one knows exactly why he died, but it was just,
I was just about to ask, is there anything, is it just like natural causes, or as natural as they can be back in those days?
Do you know that Brwt Tywysogion, which is that primary source of Welsh history? Is
heard of it.
So we mentioned it in a bunch of other episodes, and it's like this annalistic chronicle of everything that's happened in Wales, and it's like one of the most important pieces of like Welsh history that kind of chronologizes what happened and who was who and all that stuff. And in it, Dafydd ap Llywelyn's described as a Tarian Cymru, the Shield of Wales.
And, that's a cool name.
Yeah, and he's kind of regarded as being, there's like the poets at the time eulogized him with like quite honourable poems and stuff, and he was seen as being a really, really good leader, just quite short-lived. But because he had no male heirs, he was succeeded by his nephew, Llywelyn ap Gruffydd, a.k.a. Llywelyn Ein Llywolaf. So, like, to sum up briefly, like, he appears to be like a good leader. He like reconquered much of his father's lands that was originally stripped from him. He signed for peace. He like continued to work on Wales diplomacy and continued relationships with Catholic Church and stuff. He was a good military commander, and it looked like he had been a worthy son of the great Llywelyn. But his story was cut short by harsh.
I was going to say another one of the example in Welsh history where if something, a little thing had changed, like if he'd survived that winter, I wonder what he'd have.
Who knows? I was thinking that. I was really thinking that. But harsh winters and tough living, that's it's going to get you.
Oh, I'm glad I have a reference image as well for Llywelyn's dad, Gruffydd, the big portly boy trying to abseil down fucking Tower of London on some sheets. Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah. Fucking hell, man. He's northern now. It's fucking bastard. I fucking hate London.
Everyone is when we try and do impressions. Yeah. Fucking hell.
Fucking hell, you daft bastard, the liars. So that's, someone who, and doing this has helped me kind of chronologize and realize the gap between Llywelyn Ein Llywolaf and Llywelyn Fawr, and how long that was and what was going on between. And reading about Llywelyn Fawr, like, I've really enjoyed reading about him. I'm really keen for us to do a full episode, because he's...
Yeah, we'll do like a deep dive on him.
Yeah, and it's quite a lot of like... I know we've mentioned him loads, but it's like, I think because he's so big, we maybe haven't really done a whole thing about him. And really, I think because we maybe just assume that people know what he is, or maybe we assume...
Yeah, because he had a long and... I imagine a long varied career with lots of different achievements.
Like,
maybe we should do like another one.
Like Welsh dominance, which is really unheard of. So I think we should do a proper episode on him.
Definitely. No, that's really good, mate. And like you said, I think I totally agree with you there, that the way it's like chronologized in my mind is much clearer now, you know, between these, what we consider like the great leaders, if you like, or heroes.
Yeah.
It's having that like stopgap, like you said, because he's a lesser known.
Yeah.
One of them, old Dav.
Yeah. All right, should we wrap that up? And
we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. All right, well, Diolch and Grandar, thanks for listening. Review us, share us.
Cheers, ta-da, 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 ta-da.